Welcome to Use Your Words Authors Speak. This is Elise Stewart, and I am here with my co-host, Tom Hester, and we have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Lydia Huerta today. And so thank you, Lydia, for being with us.
Of course. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you here. I know that you work at the university, and you are assistant professor of Latin American Studies and Latino Studies and Women and Gender Studies.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I'm also the co-director for the Center for Gender Equity and Social Justice.
That is really great. And did that just open? Was that just this year or was that 2 years now?
Actually, it's been 3 years. Man, time flies.
Yeah, wow. That's such a great thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
Will you tell us a little bit about it?
So when I moved here 5 years ago from Austin, Texas, I had just finished my PhD. I was very shocked by the fact that Western New Mexico University did not have a Women and Gender Studies program and or a space for women on campus. And I thought that was really interesting because most places have that. I mean, we're in the 21st century, right? We should. We've been through the women's movement. And so I was introduced to Dr. Emma Bailey. And we started having conversations about why there was a lack of space on this campus that was not a space that was safe for women and students who were LGBT. And out of those conversations, we actually decided to open a Women and Gender Studies minor at the university. And from when that got approved, we're like, okay, well, now we need a center. So the center actually started on July 31st. 2014 now. So, yeah.
Wow.
It's been a while. And we changed the name from the Center for Gender Equity to the Center for Gender Equity and Social Justice last year.
Okay.
Because our student coordinators, who are students who work there, were kind of like, you know, gender intersects with a lot of social justice issues. Why don't we add that piece to what we do and to the programming that we do? We're like, that makes a lot of sense. Let's go ahead and do that. So we voted. Mm-hmm. Everybody agreed, and we went for it. And a lot of people confuse a name, and they say the Center for Gender Equality. And it's interesting to me that people are still using that language, mm-hmm. equality versus equity. And I think that's a conversation maybe we can get into later.
Yeah, that is. Well, there is a step with calling it equal. That's a step.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So basically, for those of you who don't understand the lingo, equality basically means the same opportunity for everyone, right? So there's a joke I like to tell. It's basically God, and he has a lion, a penguin, a fish, and a frog. And he's like, all right, you're all equal. Go climb that tree. That's the test. Climb the tree. And they kind of look at each other like, well, I'm a lion. And the fish is like, I'm in water. And the penguin's like, have you not seen me? I'm slick. Like, there's no way I can climb that tree. So equality would assume that everybody has an equal opportunity to climb that tree, right? Equity actually says, well, you know, the fish will need a helper to have a ladder to put him on the tree. Mm-hmm. And the penguin would need something else to allow him to kind of slide up the tree or something. And the lion probably has a better chance of doing it all on their own. And, you know, the frog probably could jump, but maybe they need some steps. So equity is actually building into the structure of institutions services that allow students to have access to things that will allow them to get to the top of the tree. Does that make sense?
That's beautiful. That's a great way. And such great images. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for your just making it very clear.
Thank you.
Because equity can mean different things. And so, So I know that just recently you had at the heart of, the heart of gender justice in New Mexico, intersectionality, economic security, and health, a kind of a program that was held there, and that was March 13th, and women came from...
So you're talking about womannewmexico.org.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we actually partnered with them last year, and they actually came to campus last year and had an info session about the discovery of their study, mm-hmm. Which kind of pointed out that in New Mexico, women need to heal. We need community structures to help us heal from generational trauma. And for those of you who've never heard of NewMexicoWoman.org, I highly recommend you go to the website. Guess what? Super easy. NewMexicoWoman.org. Mm-hmm. And you can download the report there. And they actually just brought Maria Hinojosa to Santa Fe 2 weeks ago, yes. Mm-hmm. On the week of March 3rd through the 8th, we actually had F Week, mm-hmm. which was a whole week to celebrate women because of International Women's Day, and also bring women to talk about important issues. Mm-hmm. So on Monday, we had an amazing outdoor scholar named Denise Mitten, who kind of educated us on all these really cool women have been doing outdoor activities for over two centuries, which I actually had no idea that there were so many women who had ventured into the outdoors and climbed mountains and stuff. Right. And it was very educating for me, and I think mm-hmm. for students as well, to see that women have been in the outdoors way, way, way before than we ever had imagined, by themselves, too. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday, we had a board member from the Hispanic Heritage Fund, mm-hmm. And who also happens to be working in the philanthropic branch of Target, come talk about how Latina women are disrupting the workplace and what they bring to the workplace, which is a great talk. It was an amazing, amazing talk, which you can actually see on our Facebook page, hey. Which is facebook.com/thecenter. And you can find it there. Her name is Elisa Juarez. And then on Wednesday, we had a concert celebrating women in music. And on Thursday, we brought a somewhat controversial speaker. Mm-hmm. Her name is Sandra Ibarra, also known as La Chica Boom. And she's sort of, she's a performance artist, and she likes to juxtapose the object with race and gender. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so she gave a very amazing talk, which she talked about, you know, some of the sexual acts that she performs to get people to think about the objectification of women, specifically Hispanic women.
Right.
So to give you a little clue, just tapatio sauce and imagine what you can do with that.
There you go. Awesome. That is so wonderful. And I was just saying before we began that I wish we knew the community is always a little bit of a gap between some of the great things that happen at the university and now at the center that we don't know about or until the very last minute and it's too late to go, or I don't know how we can make a liaison, but gosh, it would be, I know you poster and I know you try. It's not for lack of that, but there's still a gap. And we don't hear about it. I don't know how that.
Yes, I think also because when we do try to advertise, I think people have so many things on their heads and there's so many events going on in Silver City. It's kind of hard to keep track of all of them. So I'm going to give you three big ones coming up.
All right.
First one is next Wednesday. It is actually Transgender Day of Visibility. And we're celebrating it at Miller Library on March 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's going to be an amazing, amazing day. Susan Golightly and Joni K. Rose will be present. And I believe we're going to have a panel where people can ask questions. Mm-hmm. We're also going to have a reading of I Am Jazz. And I believe it's going to be really productive.
That's great.
And then on April 3rd, mm-hmm. which is the Tuesday following, we have partnered with SAS. And we're going to be showing The Hunting Ground, which is a documentary about sexual assault on college campuses.
Oh, wow.
And that is also going to be at 6 p.m. in Light Hall.
Okay.
So Transgender Day of Visibility at Miller Library at 6 p.m. and The Hunting Ground partnership with SAS at 6 p.m. in Light Hall on Tuesday, April 3rd. And then for those who are literary inclined, we are actually bringing a very cool speaker on April 16th. Her name is Denise Forham, and she has been a World Slam Poetry champion.
Oh, wow.
She was named by Glesson one of the top Latinx heroes for the classroom. She identifies as a queer poet, mm-hmm. and her poetry has a lot to do with being bilingual and the power of words and how that shapes your identity, and she's just amazing. If you have not heard of her, go to YouTube, type in Denise with the C, Froham, Froham. She is amazing.
Awesome. That sounds wonderful. Thank you, Lydia.
Of course. That is
great. That is just wonderful.
And that's going to be April the 16th. And where is it going to be?
So she's actually going to be offering a workshop, a one-hour workshop at 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. in Light Hall. Mm-hmm. So if you'd like to participate, please email thecenter@wnmu.edu. so we can have you on our list. And she will be performing for half an hour in the evening at 6 p.m. Okay. at the center, which is located at 1211 Mississippi Street.
1211 Mississippi Street. That's where the center is located. It's a little house. It's not really on campus. It's kind of next to campus. So I know I looked for it at first myself and then found it, and it's great. It just has a house, has a giant sign on it, and it's not hard to find once you just cruise by and look for it. And what a great place to have something like that in our town, because we need that.
Well, and actually, if you're into open mic nights, we have a thing called Revival, mm-hmm. which is the third Tuesday of every month.
Okay.
And we're trying to get funding so we can stay open through the summer, but I don't know if that's going to happen. You know how funding is around here. however, we still have one more revival left in April.
Okay.
So hopefully some of you will venture out there and join us for open mic night. Sometimes students perform.
Okay, great.
People read their poetry, their work. And we also have a space called Tell Us What You Think and just people rambling about their thoughts.
Great.
So this past Tuesday, we had somebody come up and talk about guns and schools. And it was really interesting just to hear their thoughts on that.
Right. And there's going to be a rally for that on Saturday.
March 24th. Yep. We're not organizing it, but there's people that are from the center that are participating.
Right.
Yeah, so I definitely go participate.
And that's going to be noon at Golf Park on Saturday.
Correct.
Noon at Golf Park. And Revival, what time does that start?
It starts at 7 p.m.
Okay, thanks.
I know it's a little later, but
it's light longer now.
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, Lydia, tell us a little bit about you. I mean, you're young, you've got your PhD, you're an assistant professor, you've done so much work already. Wow, it's quite amazing.
Well, I moved from Guadalajara, Mexico when I was 15, and I moved to Austin, Texas, which if you've ever been to Austin, you know that Texans like to talk between their teeth like this. And it's very hard for someone who's learning English to be able to read lips. So it was one of those situations where you sink or swim. And I had to learn how to you know, learn English and all that, you know, how to interact with people. And it was definitely a very interesting experience. And so I completed my high school in Austin. And then after that, I was actually part of the Student Creative Journal. It's funny, things that I forget I've done. And I loved writing little vignettes for it about, you know, being the only Mexican at the white school.
Yeah.
It was definitely an experience. And I was actually called The Mexican. So I had a pretty cool name. I was like, all right, cool. And then after that, I actually went off to Boston University, where I started in pre-med, believe it or not. And because I didn't want to lose contact with my culture, I took Spanish courses. And then sometime in my junior year, my advisor said to me, Lydia, you have really good grades in humanities and social sciences. Don't you think life's trying to tell you something? And I was like, you know what? Yeah, maybe. And then I had a really life-changing experience. I was working at Mass General Hospital as a volunteer. And I was asked to take a really pregnant Salvadorian woman from the main hospital to the pro bono clinic because she was undocumented. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, this is not why people become doctors. You become doctors to help anyone who's in need. But when the bureaucracy gets involved and you can't see someone, like, I was taking her in this wheelchair and I was like, this woman's about to explode. Like, what am I going to do if something happens here on the sidewalk? And that's when I realized, you know, I don't want to be part of this system. I actually want to do literature and read about people and stories and poetry. And I've always liked my Spanish class, so I think I'm going to switch tracks. And I remember when I called my dad to tell him about my decision, he didn't speak to me for over a month. And finally, I said, Dad, I'm going to be a doctor, just a different kind of doctor.
Aww.
So that kind of helped. Anyway, long story short, I ended up doing a master's at Boston University as well in Hispanic languages and literatures and got to be exposed to excellent literary authors, poets, and also essayists. And it's interesting because in a lot of world literature courses, we don't really read about people like José Martí. You know, it's certainly interesting to see who gets to be read in some of these college classrooms, especially when we have a lot of Latin American authors who lived in the United States.
Right.
So, for example, one of my favorite authors, Jorge Luis Borges, lived in Texas. People don't know that. Mm-hmm.
We don't. We have to interrupt just for one little second to make a quick break, and we will come right back with Lydia. So hang with us, please. Use Your Words, Authors Speak. This is Elise Stewart, and Tom Hester is here, too. We're interviewing Dr. Lydia Huerta, and we just want her to keep talking, so go, Lydia.
Well, I was just sharing that. I was really shocked to learn that Jorge Luis Borges was actually a teacher at the University of Texas in their Spanish program, which I got to learn all about. And I think when I did my doctoral studies at the University of Texas at Austin, it was fascinating to me to learn all these amazing people actually went to UT Austin and the institution kind of didn't recognize them. Gloria Anzaldúa, one of the most prolific gender theorists we have, who was a mestiza, went to the University of Texas at Austin and they didn't really buy into what she was saying, and she ended up in California. But it's just interesting to think about, you know, the people that have gone through these institutions and how they've shaped their thought processes and mm-hmm. their ideas of who they are. And so in a way, leading into sort of who I've become in a way, I did my dissertation there on woman killings, uh-huh. Which the technical term for that is femicides or feminicides, if you want to point out the accountability and complicity of the government and justice authorities.
Okay.
I actually brought a poem today to read to you all.
Oh, that would be good.
That I wrote while writing my dissertation, because poetry has always been a way for me to sort of like process what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I don't consider myself a poet necessarily, because no one's ever really told me, like, hey, you're a great poet.
I think we could.
But, thank you. But it's definitely, it helps me process. And I think that poetry has a really interesting way of taking what's in your soul and
right.
vocalizing it.
And for poetry, you know, it takes everything and it brings it into one small vessel,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas novels and essays go out and ripple out, and
exactly.
poetry takes you and just makes you really condense everything. So it has its form that really helps us think about something or get to the core of something.
Very true. Yes. Yeah. And so I brought this poem that I wrote when I was, I read it and I'm like, I can't believe I wrote that. But it's called Smothered Feelings. And I wrote it while I was in Juarez doing some research for my dissertation. So I'm going to read it in Spanish first, and then I'll read the translation.
Thank you.
Sentimientos sofocados, golpes al alma, sin respiro. Madrugadas coloridas, camas desangradas. Son las 4:26 de la mañana, y me asaltan sus gritos, todo por una almohada. Chartusean las lágrimas hacia aquel abismo. Cuando los vientos soplan violentos, las horas son, pero momentos. Y terminamos en días sin gris. So the translation of that, which, as you should know, translation is never literal.
But
so here's my translation
of it. When we only know a few words of Spanish, yes.
Smothered feelings, strokes to the soul without respite. Color for dawns, blood-soaked beds. It's 4:26 in the morning, and screams assault all of my senses. I can't contain them to pillowcases. Tears chartreuse towards the abyss. Winds blow violently, making hours into moments and days without gray.
Thank you. Thank you. We had Stella Pope Duarte here, who wrote If I Die in Juarez, which is a fictional account of what has really happened and what it continues to happen in Juarez.
Yeah. It's important to signal that it continues to happen.
Continues
yes.
to happen, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So my dissertation was about sort of the cultural narratives that were written as a reaction to the femicides in Juarez from 1998 to 2012.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. There's some great literature that was produced about it. One written by Roberto Bolaño, 2006, which is an amazing work of literature inspired by those killings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you came to school, and after that you were in Austin. How did you come to New Mexico?
Oh, actually, my grandparents moved here in 1997.
Uh-huh.
They moved here from a really small town in Mexico called Cananea, Sonora, which is maybe 60 miles from Naco, Arizona. And my step-grandfather had always been around mines. He was the general manager for the Anaconda Mining Company in Cananea at the time when my mom was growing up. And he knew of this area, and he decided to become a rancher once he retired. So he bought a ranch out in Socorro and wanted a town that was cool and had a lot of personality. And they settled here in Silver City. They lived up by W Mountain. So it's interesting because I had been coming to Silver City, but I didn't know there was a university in Silver City. And when my mom moved out here to help my grandmother, who was suffering from Alzheimer's at the time, she sent me the job posting. And she's like, hey, there's a job at this university here. I was like, there's a university in Silver City? What? So I applied, I interviewed, and I actually really liked it. It had a lot of potential. It has a lot of potential.
Wow. So what year did you come then?
I came here in 2013. Fall of 2013.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you got busy quickly. Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
I tend to throw myself into things I'm passionate about.
Well, that's what life is for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why we're here. I know you also were part of a panel, The Silence No More, that just happened at Miller Library just this week. How was that? How was it well attended?
Yes, the Democratic Forum has actually been doing an excellent job of having really thought-provoking conversations in partnership with the Mecha Club. And the panel yesterday was very thought-provoking. We had Chelsea from SAS, Rachel from Miller Fukio, myself, and then Frank Cavada was there. Not Cavada, sorry. Gonzalez. My apologies. And it was interesting because we had perspective from law enforcement. We had perspective from two NGOs who deal with domestic violence and one who deals with it also from a sexual harassment and assault perspective. So, you know, you have sexual assault, sexual harassment represented by SAS, domestic violence and all that entails by Refugio, and then Frank Gonzalez, who's running for sheriff at the moment, talking about law enforcement. And then you had me, who's sort of the cultural studies person, talking about the changes we need to make in our culture.
And that's the thing.
And it was moderated by Karen Woodlock. And she asked us three very poignant questions, and one of which I thought was really interesting was, do we believe that we're at the precipice of a cultural shift in addressing sexual assault and sexual violence with all these movements started by like the Harvey Weinstein scandals, Rupert Murdoch having her president being accused by five women, et cetera.
And Winfrey's talk.
Oprah Winfrey's talk, yes. And then the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement. And so it was interesting to sort of like hear what people had to say about it. And what to me was most revealing is that we forget our history, because the women's movement had been tackling all these issues then in the 1960s, 1970s. And it's hard to believe that 50 years after, we're still talking about the same thing, trying different methods. And who knows, maybe it'll take 50 years or 70 years for there to be a complete cultural shift. But I think one of the things that's really important to understand is that in order for a shift to actually occur, both men and women need to be part of the conversation.
Yes.
It's not just women. I mean, yes, it affects women. It affects men, too.
It does.
But in chain, like, it's kind of like it's on us to actually look at our own behaviors and how we're perpetuating things that contribute to sexual violence, including sexual assault, sexual harassment, rape, domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it affects the children.
Of course.
You know, of course it does. What they grow up with and what they see and what they're afraid to talk about, and so it's hard for them as well.
Yes, of course. And actually, SAS and Refugio made excellent points about the need for prevention programs for children who are in these situations. Because as our candidate for sheriff said, it starts in the home. And when kids see these behaviors at home, then they get reproduced. And the cycle never ends. So
right, it doesn't get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about just women and writing, and how do you balance that in your life? I mean, it sounds like everything that you do, you're always thinking about the next change and how can we as a community make it. But how do you even get time to write?
Well, I decided to make it a meditative practice. So at the end of the day, I take about 10 minutes. Sometimes it's just 5, I'll be honest. And I just write. Like, I sit there with a timer and I just make myself write. And because my medium is poetry, sometimes the stuff I write is terrible. I won't lie. Sometimes I'm like, okay, I could maybe submit this to a publication. And I have been writing a story, actually. And so throughout the day, as I have experiences, I think about my characters and like what I'm going to write that evening. Mm-hmm. But I make it sort of a disciplined meditation. Mm-hmm. I wish I was more spontaneous or I had more time to just do that all the time. But I have to make a living so I can pay my student loans. And so I figured little by little, things will get better.
It will. It will. And by keeping yourself going like that, you know, you're not ever getting unplugged from it, mm-hmm. which is a problem that I found in my own work. If I get away too long, then you have to try and swim back to where you were. And sometimes the water's a whole different temperature and you don't really remember where you were.
And I think the other part is also reading great writers,
yes.
right? So right
yes.
now, I highly recommend to anybody who's looking for a new author named Valeria Luiselli. She's actually Mexican of origin, but she writes in English. And she has this novel called The Story of My Teeth, which is fascinating. It's very Borgian.
I've heard of it.
And then she has this 99-page essay that is called Tell Me How It Ends.
Okay.
And it's about immigration and kids and immigration. So if you're looking for something around immigration and kids, that's a great essay.
Great.
You can read it in half hour over coffee in the morning. It is beautifully written. Mm-hmm. I haven't read an essay that evoked such passion mm-hmm. probably in about 10 years.
That's great. Will you spell her last name for us?
Yeah. Luiselli. Luiselli.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Because we have a responsibility, too, to educate ourselves, to try and keep abreast of what's going on, so we can be ready to make change. Mm-hmm. If we don't educate ourselves, then there's really no chance of somebody else stepping in and doing it for us.
Exactly.
We're part of the process. So you're already telling us about what writers have influenced your work. Do you have any advice for new writers, for people that are just starting to write?
Yes, I would say don't doubt yourself. It doesn't matter what you write. Write it. Then, a few years later, you can go back and say, okay, maybe this one there's something here. Because I think what happens to a lot of new writers, I mean, at least it happened to me, I'm like, oh, I'm terrible. Why am I even going to write? There's nothing here. I'm going to be so judged, blah, 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 blah. But if you think about it, every writer has to start somewhere.
That's really true, I think. And it's a great reminder, and that's what we forget late at night when we think we are too tired to write before we go to sleep, or in the morning when nothing is really showing up. We're hoping that it's going to be there. Lydia, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thank you for you and Tom, too, for inviting me.
You're just so inspiring.
I'm really honored.
Yeah, and so this is KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. And we thank you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.